Alzheimer's is the most common cause of dementia. It disrupts daily activity and cognitive skills like a person's memory, a person's judgment, and language. The illness is progressive, and researchers aren't entirely clear what causes it. African Americans have often been overlooked in large-scale health surveys as researchers try to figure out the disease. It's a conversation about Alzheimer's on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Carrie Gleason is a clinical neuropsychologist and an associate professor of medicine with a focus on geriatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She is the minority recruitment co-leader for the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Well, before we get into specifics, I'm wondering if you could speak to the scope of Alzheimer's in America. Who is affected? How many people does it affect? And give us some of the basics on it.
So if I can be brief, that it's going to affect a lot of individuals. In the coming decades, we expect that many people will either fall victim to the disease or actually be touched by it in some way, perhaps as a caregiver or a family member of someone who's affected by the disease. Currently, it's over 5 million people in America who are affected, but with the aging population, we expect that number to grow exponentially over the coming decades.
What do we know? We do know that African Americans are twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's disease compared to Caucasians, and you've been working on a UW study that aims to understand why. Mm-hmm. What have you found so far?
What we're finding is the importance of lifestyle factors. So the disease has different risk factors, and it's pointing towards the importance of risk factors, especially for African Americans. The upside of this is that we can do something about that. We can't do things to change our genetics or our parental history, but we can do a lot to change these lifestyle factors and these sort of the comorbidities that then raise the risk for the disease. For example, heart disease, high cholesterol, diabetes, hypertension. These are all ways that we have a foothold to address the disease and possibly reduce the risk for African Americans.
Why has it been so difficult through the decades to incorporate more people of other ethnicities, more African Americans, Latino Americans, into these clinical trials?
So, and I can ask my partner here, Teresa Sanders, to comment on that.
But
a big part of that is the historical mistreatments by the research community, where we have not approached research in a responsible way. We've not included communities in decisions around research, and we've just frankly, there's been mistreatment.
How is your research working to turn that around?
The fundamental philosophy of the research program is to involve the community from the beginning in terms of the nature of the research, the recruitment process, to basically guide what we're doing to address the disease. And another part that's really important is that this research should be led by people who look like the community. So a big part is actually growing the next generation of researchers who have a stake in the disease, basically because it's affecting their community. So a big thrust of what we're doing at the university is to really try to grow the next generation of researchers who are coming from the community.
We're talking right now with Carrie Gleason, a clinical neuropsychologist and an associate professor of medicine with a focus on geriatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about Alzheimer's disease. And let's bring in Teresa Sanders to the conversation. She's co-chair of the Solomon Carter Fuller Planning Committee. This year's event takes place on February 16th and 17th in Madison. It's an educational gathering that includes continuing education for healthcare professionals, a community lecture, confidential memory screenings, and educational workshops for Alzheimer's disease patient caregivers. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
What is your personal stake here? You have been, you have been very involved in this. Why Alzheimer's?
Well, let me give you a little bit about my background. I'm the former director of long-term care for Dane County Human Services. So I had some background in Alzheimer's and dementia and other diseases. And in addition to that, I know that in the African-American community, it's very difficult for us to engage them in participating in research studies. And so I've been a member of the Solomon Carter Fuller Committee for I think this is my fourth year. And some of the things that we know based on past history is that there's been a lot of bad research that African Americans have not voluntarily participated in. They were sort of thrown into the into this research project without their permission. And so it makes it difficult for African Americans to hold their hands up and say, I want to do this, even though it might benefit their health and well-being. But it's sort of a standoffish sort of thing for African Americans.
Because the trust isn't there.
Yes, it's the trust. Plus, they don't believe that anything is going to come out of it. How will they benefit? And as you know, we want to have some instant sort of gratification from what we've been involved in. And so African-American elders especially want to see how it's going to benefit them and their grandchildren. So it takes a lot of encouragement for us to get them to do that.
And to explain that clinical trials may take generations to find the answers from. I mean, they may take decades to learn to see patterns and to understand what the outcomes. So you also have to say this is about future generations.
Yes, and I think we can also do some prevention in that, because we know from our own health status that we are high risk for high blood pressure, cholesterol, cardiovascular disease. And so we know those factors already. So we can prevent some of that so that we will not be a candidate for the disease later in our life, because that's when it happens with us. It's just that we think everything is good. That's part of old age. And I'm going to continue eating and doing my own habits. And really, that's the wrong thing to do. We need to prevent some of that before it happens.
Carrie Gleason, a part of diagnosing Alzheimer's is a memory screening. Can you walk us through what a memory screening is like?
So the memory screening is one part of a multifactorial evaluation. We are offering community memory screenings as a way to get people sort of have a foot in the door. The memory screening is intended primarily as an outreach effort to offer these memory checkups in the community to perhaps make it a little more comfortable for people to sort of approach the issue. The memory screening is it's basically a memory checkup. And it's intended for people who are concerned about their memory or for family members to direct their loved one to the memory screening for a quick checkup. If we find that there are memory problems, and the nice thing is we can compare the responses to a group of people who look like the clientele. So we've got normative data on our memory tests from African-American communities, and we can say whether or not it's outside of the norm of sort of typical. If things are outside of the normal range, the next step is to refer people to a full memory evaluation. We would never diagnose based on a memory screening.
The country's elderly population is growing rapidly, and Alzheimer's disease poses a major public health challenge. Older African Americans may be disproportionately affected by the disease. African Americans account for only 3 to 5% of clinical trial participants, despite representing more than 20% of the 5.5 million Americans who have Alzheimer's. We're getting perspective on the disease from Carrie Gleason. She's an associate professor of medicine with a focus on geriatrics. Teresa Sanders is here. She's the planning committee on the co-chair of the planning committee for the Solomon Carter Fuller Community Discussion about Alzheimer's disease. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How has Alzheimer's touched your life? Have you cared for a loved one with the disease? If so, how did that experience impact you? Join the conversation after this news. Scientists say African Americans' disproportionate rates of dementia may be related in part to the prevalence of disorders that raise the risk of vascular disease. Take, for instance, diabetes or hypertension. Socioeconomic factors could be in play, like higher rates of poverty. We are exploring Alzheimer's this hour of the morning show. Clinical neuropsychologist Carrie Gleason is with us, an associate professor of medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Teresa Sanders is here. She's co-chair of the Solomon Carter Fuller Planning Committee in Madison. Your questions and insights on Alzheimer's at 800-642-1234. Have you had memory screenings? What was that like for you? Are you coping with the disease in your family? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Carrie, we sometimes hear the terms Alzheimer's disease and dementia used interchangeably, but can you clarify for us the distinction between the two?
Sure. This is a common question. Dementia is the syndrome. It's what we can see, so it's the behaviors. So it's the forgetfulness, the difficulty managing day-to-day life. It's a change from how things used to be for the person. And the most common cause is Alzheimer's disease, either as a single cause or in combination with another type of dementia. It's estimated it accounts for about 80% of dementias. So it's really the difference between the syndrome and the cause.
Teresa, you have been involved with this event happening this month named after Dr. Solomon Carter Fuller. What can you tell us about who this individual was?
Well, first of all, Dr. Solomon Carter Fuller, he was the pioneer in co-authoring the disease of Alzheimer's. And the unique thing about his history, an African American who came from Liberia, but he studied in the United States. But because of racism, he decided to leave the United States and go back to Germany and do most studying there. His interest was in the brain. He was a psychiatrist, and he wanted to study more about how the brain functioned, especially how the disease of Alzheimer's was being concentrated in our brain. And because he was an African American, he really was interested in how it would work with his own family. And so Dr. Solomon Carter Fuller is someone that we really, really appreciate for starting this great pioneer of research. And so we here in the Madison community are very honored to sponsor this event that comes up on an annual basis.
Carrie, how did his work inspire researchers even today and his discoveries?
So a fundamental contribution, not only to the science, but he was he translated the original paper from Dr. Alzheimer's into English. So think of the ability, the dissemination that happened because of his contribution there. His work was recognized in pockets throughout the country, but I give credit to our founders for this event. We're in our eighth year. Dr. Dorothy Edwards and Miss Charlie Daniel had the foresight to say this is something, you know, we can honor an African-American pioneer and really try to raise awareness in the African-American community. So this is their brainchild, and it's grown over the years. This year, I think, you know, I always think we've got a great program, but this year we added some unique features. For example, a cooking demonstration on healthy cooking with Chef Rod Latson, pulling it back to that whole connection of modifiable risk factors. If we can address our diabetes and hypertension through diet and exercise, these are great ways to have a foothold to fight the disease. So in its growth over the years, we've made a concerted effort to involve the community in planning this. So our fantastic, engaged planning community, chaired by Ms. Teresa Sanders and Mr. Bobby Moore, and it's just been so instrumental in making this event something that is responsive to community's interests. Yeah, I so appreciate you guys always keep me on track. I want to go in one direction and they pull me back to reality. And like I said, every year I'm excited about this, thinking, oh, it keeps getting better.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's bring in Mary in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
How are you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
What is your story and your connection to this disease?
When I met my husband, my future mother-in-law was starting to go down the road. She was a accountant for the county for delinquent fathers. She had a grasp on everything, and she lost the ability to balance the checkbook. And slowly, she kept going down. And my husband said, there's nothing wrong with her. My sister-in-law and I took her to the doctor, and she eventually died of the disease. Now, over the past 5 years, my husband has been going down the same road, and I finally convinced his doctor, I don't care if he passed the MOCA, do it again, because this is what's happening. And he now was diagnosed.
Mm. So, Mary, what is your role right now?
My role right now is frustrated. We get to an intersection and he says, remind me where I am going. I am basically the sole caretaker, as our daughter does not recognize there's anything wrong with him or refuses to recognize. He does, only because the doctor said, you have traits of blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
So had I not been through it once already with his mother, I probably would have pulled my hair out.
Mary, thank you for sharing your story and being with us. Carrie Gleason, your reaction.
Oh, so Mary, thank you for sharing that story. And I want to comment on two things. The importance of good diagnostics. Wisconsin is really unique because it has a network of diagnostic clinics led by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. My own mother lives in Minnesota, and there isn't that model of outlying clinics. So there are clinics, and most likely clinics close by. If you go to the website for the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute, you can see the list of diagnostic clinics. Diagnosis is so important because it gives you a handle. It gives you something that you can, a starting point to understand what's happening. The second part is to highlight the need that, or the importance of not taking this journey alone. Another part of this is related to the Solomon Carter Fuller Day as well, but we have a partnership. It's a community university partnership. And our community partner, the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin, is one of those organizations that, along with the Alzheimer's Association, where you can refer families to get help, advice, guidance, support, to really understand how to best cope with the disease.
And
so,
Mary,
communication advice, for example.
And Mary feels frustrated. Is that normal?
Yeah, that is very normal. There's a lot of adjustment. So you're used to having a relationship with your partner, your spouse, and suddenly that relationship is changing. Your role is changing. There's a lot of a loss and grief. But at the same time, this expectation for them, why can't they be the way they have been? And if it helps to sort of depersonalize it, this is the disease, it's not the person. And recognizing that, like any relationship, it becomes an evolving relationship. It's going to look different than it did. And try to the extent possible, find the joy in the new relationship.
Let's go to Jerry now, who joins us in Milwaukee. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Number one, diagnosis is extremely important. But I want to ask, what does the medical community know about the prevention of the disease? I mean, we can work with it after the fact. But prevention, to me, is extremely important. And B, where do we as Americans stand in terms of the world community with the disease? Do we work in conjunction, for instance, with any other nations medically to prevent the disease?
Carrie, go ahead.
Oh, so, Jerry, thanks for that question. Actually, you and I are thinking alike. Prevention is absolutely the key. Once you have the disease, there's been a lot of damage in the brain. So trying to address the disease once it's clinically diagnosed is really difficult. We know that the disease itself, what's happening in the brain, can happen decades before you see the clinical symptoms. So prevention is absolutely important. For the African American community, prevention strategies are oftentimes addressing these midlife risk factors for vascular disease. So managing your diabetes, managing hypertension, diet, exercise. But I also want to think creatively about other evidence that shows that having a purpose in life may reduce your risk for dementia. So the advice I give is to approach it from sort of a whole person perspective. Mind, body, spirit, keeping all aspects healthy. And you sort of up the urgency of this when you think about the risk for dementia later in life. These are all, don't wait to address these. Be aggressive in addressing these factors. And the world community question?
And the world, and yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And here in Wisconsin, we have a center, the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, that's part of a network of over 30 centers throughout the United States. We work very closely with these centers. We get together with these centers twice yearly. Those centers then work closely with the international community. And in fact, right now, our deadline for abstracts for the international conference, it'll be held in July. There's two back-to-back international conferences in Chicago this year in July. Our center and our U.S. investigators are very closely integrated into that community.
Carrie Gleason is with us, an associate professor of medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She's also the minority recruitment co-leader for the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Teresa Sanders is here, co-chair of the two-day educational programming around Alzheimer's that's coming up later this month in Madison. You can join the discussion. How has the disease impacted your life? 800-642-1234. before. How can medicine and the culture surrounding clinical trials be demystified, made accessible? Teresa Sanders, I'm wanting to ask that to you as well. How can medicine be made more accepting and acceptable in these clinical trials, be more less scary, more, you know, just demystifying the whole surroundings of it, so more African Americans can feel like they want to be in these clinical trials?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that because of historical racism, it's very difficult for African Americans to be a part of research, take some new medications that they're not familiar with. But one of the things that we can do to encourage them is to say to them that this is going to help with their long-term care. If they start to eating right, exercising, enjoying their life, getting to regular doctor's appointments. And so this medicine will help sort of relieve some of that so that as they get older, they will no longer need all of those other medications that they're taking. African Americans in general are not medicine takers. It's not something that we enjoy taking because we don't see any of the benefits of taking the medicine. But I think the next generation of older adults are seeing a lot more interest in taking medicine. So we encourage all of our older adults to please participate, and it's not going to harm you, and you will get better over time.
Carrie Gleason, we had a caller who couldn't stay with us but wanted to say 50 years ago, we didn't hear much about Alzheimer's and dementia. So why is it that rates have gone up so much? Is it because things are getting worse, or is it about awareness and recognition is getting better? What is it?
Well, that's a great question. It's probably multiple issues. The first is that people are living longer. A second reason is that we're getting better at recognizing it. So I'll give you an example. My grandfather died of hardening of the arteries, and he was about 70 when he developed his symptoms. Very classic symptoms of dementia. My uncle, his son, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and he was closer to the age of 80. So he lived longer than his father, but he also had better medical care. So perhaps he was able to stave off symptoms for another 5 to 10 years. So it is definitely something more in our sort of consciousness. A big part is that we're living longer, but also another part is that we're getting better at recognizing it accurately.
African Americans are diagnosed with Alzheimer's twice as often as white people, and Latinos 1.5 times as often. More than 20 years ago, the National Institutes of Health mandated that people who enroll in NIH-approved clinical trials reflect the nation's racial makeup and gender breakdown. We're delving into these complex issues surrounding Alzheimer's with Carrie Gleason, an associate professor of medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She is also minority recruitment co-leader for the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Teresa Sanders is here. She's co-chair of the two-day educational programming around Alzheimer's that's coming up here in Madison. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Should clinical trials continue to exclude, as they generally do, people with comorbidities, especially given the disproportionate percentage of people with more than one illness? Let's discuss. We'll be back after this news update. Alzheimer's is classified as a chronic disease. It is progressive. It begins with a pathologic process characterized by deposits of abnormal proteins in the brain. Researchers all over the world are trying to find drug treatments. They're running clinical trials, and falling well short, though, of our country's changing demographics. African Americans are disproportionately hit by the disease. They estimate the share of minority participants in NIH-registered clinical trials to be less than 10%. UW clinical neuropsychologist Carrie Gleason stays with us. She specializes in geriatrics and co-directs minority recruitment for the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Theresa Sanders is co-chair of planning for the two-day Solomon Carter Fuller community discussion about Alzheimer's disease coming up in Madison. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you tried a clinical trial? How is it going? Are you in a trial right now? Tell your story, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jim, who joins us from River Falls. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you for having the program. I've got a couple of comments and questions. First of all, my mother passed away in September, and the death certificate stated that the cause of death was Alzheimer's. However, there were never any confirmatory diagnostics. She had dementia, but you know there were never any CT scans or genetic testing for beta amyloid genetic reasons to suspect Alzheimer's. So I'm just wondering, with as far as when studies published, you know, how many people are dying of Alzheimer's, how accurate they are based on, you know, what diagnostics are done, or if they're just looking oftentimes at death certificates. Because, like I said, without doing an autopsy and histopathology on the brain, I don't think it could be confirmed. And then my second point is, or just comment is, there's Dr. Dale Bredesen recently published a book called The End of Alzheimer's. He's a neurophysiologist, MD, out of UCLA. And one of the major points is that, there's a lot of drug companies looking at single types of drugs to try to find a cure, and that's not been successful. And his point is a lot of it can be associated with lifestyle and, you know, things like lack of sleep in our society, dietary issues and inflammatory issues associated with things like wheat allergies and things like that. And he seems to have had some successes with his treatment regimen for a number of people.
Some alternative way, alternative looks at this disease. Let's get Carrie Gleason for reaction.
So thanks for that question. That's a really important point. I'm a big proponent of approaching things in a multifactorial way. This is a complicated disease. And your mom probably did not go to autopsy. The autopsy oftentimes is our most definitive look at what's happening in the brain. What we know from autopsy studies is that clinicians who specialize in this disease are pretty good at recognizing it, that our accuracy rate is upwards of 80% in terms of accurately recognizing the disease. We don't miss the diagnosis of dementia so much. We might miss a second cause of dementia, so there might be another contributing factor. It is often the case that there's more than one disease going on in the brain. But the neuropathologist will look at the complete story and say, this laundry list of things is happening, these were the pathological changes, but this is the pathological change that most likely explained the dementia. And so absolutely, we have opportunities for more than one target. And I agree. And I think that the research community is recognizing this. It's still pretty heavily focused on amyloid as a target. But there are many other groups that are looking at other targets for addressing the disease. And I think I've mentioned this several times about the importance of lifestyle factors, especially at midlife. But this will take time to really kind of clarify. Think about like having a midlife intervention it's going to take decades before the research will actually be able to answer that question about whether or not these midlife changes will affect our later onset of the disease. So I think I've addressed the...
Do we know how many trials, how many research projects are going on around the world to address Alzheimer's? Are there a lot?
There are a lot. There are absolutely a lot. The easiest, of course, are the drug trials. If we could give exercise as a pill, wouldn't that be something we could? But what about if we could give the... It's a tough thing to do. Behavioral changes require a great deal of effort. It's incredibly challenging to modify the behaviors. It's much easier to give a pill. And it's much easier to control the dose, for example. But there are trials. So I have colleagues, for example, who are leading exercise trials for prevention from a condition called mild cognitive impairment, preventing it from progressing to dementia. And these are really well-designed trials that they're controlling the dose and the type of exercise, making sure that you have adequate exposure to the to whatever it is that's associated with exercise that can change the pattern in the disease. So there are things going on.
Let's go to Teresa, who joins us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. I guess I wanted to call in and talk about, I have an uncle who has dementia, and my cousin actually has her master's in this type of studies with this, and she's the one that made the connection that perhaps my uncle's dementia is directly related to the amount of concussions he sustained while he played football in high school in the 50s. My uncle had talked about how he had come off the field at the end of the game once, and his coach was like, "Wow, that was the best game you ever played," and he didn't even remember any of it.
Carrie Gleason, what do we know about the connection between concussions, brain injuries, and this disease?
So there's CTE is a condition that is associated with multiple concussions and a later dementia. It's different than Alzheimer's disease, but at another factor is that having concussions can lower the bar, so to speak, and make a person more vulnerable to the compounding factor of Alzheimer's disease pathology. So having concussions does raise your risk for Alzheimer's disease, but there are individuals who have chronic head injuries who develop a condition called CTE. So there is definitely a link.
Let's go to Matt in Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Hi. So I actually had just... two quick questions related to just a story I had about my grandma, who's she doesn't even recognize anyone who anyone is anymore. She's very late stage right now. But one of the advice I was given was that you kind of, instead of just trying to remind her constantly who you are, you kind of just go along with what she's thinking. So I remember one time I went there and she thought I was her brother-in-law, and I asked her what was going on, and she thought we were at some, like, dinner party in, like, the 1950s, and I asked her all these very specific details about, you know, what was decorated on the Christmas tree, what color the truck was outside that she was describing, and some of the stuff I actually confirmed, like, with pictures and things later on.
Oh,
like
how fascinating.
I have two questions. I say, like, what is going on in the brain that allows people with this disease to have such specific access to these very detailed memories? And the other thing that occurred to me is there some evolutionary or social reason for the disease? Because it seems odd that, like, when you're at the end of life, suddenly you have a disease that allows you to have access to memories deep in your past.
Oh, Matt in Middleton, thank you so much for the call. And we're running short on time. Carrie Gleason, what can you respond to there?
Isn't the brain fascinating?
Yes.
This is very common. There's so the evolutionary question I'll set aside for the moment, but the question about why these old memories are so vivid compared to the ability, you can't remember what you had for breakfast, but you can remember what happened 50 years ago. This is because there's a part of the brain that's affected early in the disease and is devastated pretty quickly as the disease progresses, hippocampi, that are involved in the consolidation of new memories. So the difficulty forming new memories shows up, but still your ability to retrieve these old memories remains intact. So they'll be able to tell these very lucid and accurate information from many years ago. And the more emotional the memory, the more salient it'll be.
And finally, Matt goes along and allows him to be, he's immersed in her stories and asks probing questions in the moment. Is that a good strategy?
It's a great strategy.
Wonderful.
One of the things that just doesn't help is to say, I told you this, don't you remember? And again, it's the disease, not the person. So the more you can kind of depersonalize it.
Theresa, as we close here, are there any thoughts that you have, any advice you have as you loved ones struggle with Alzheimer's?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is to get to your doctor. Also, bring your loved one with you so they can hear the same information. So they can be a part of the support that you would need. And the other thing is this wonderful event that's coming up February the 16th in the community. Please come out to the Solomon Carter Fuller Memory Screening Day. It's going to be at Fountain of Life Church in Madison. And that Friday night, we will have Dr. Cherise Elliott as the speaker. It starts at 6:30 p.m. And then Saturday morning, we have the memory screening. And later on, we will have a healthy cooking class by I always call him doctor because his food is so good. You think it's a prescription. But we will have Chef Rod Latson do some demonstration of cooking. So please come out and learn more about the disease.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Carol Gleason is an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She's also the minority recruitment co-leader for the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Theresa Sanders is co-chair of the Solomon Carter Fuller Planning Committee, and this year's event takes place February 16th and 17th. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.